fullback belly.
Three tight ends, including Haydner. Kuhn is the fullback with the first and goal. Kuhn gets the ball. Pyle trying to get his way in for the touchdown. What a great second effort.
Back, what is going on? It's your boy, the Wolf of Rush Street. RushStreetJournal.com. We bring feed you fantasy wolves here as we are every Monday at 4 p.m. with another best ball draft. But as we like to do nowadays, is also dive into some topics, some news. And of course, right now, the floodgates are open because free agency has powered on. I know last week we hit is Monday. I was just getting home from school. I had no real time to catch up other than give that rapid reaction knee jerk to some big stuff like Saquon, Jacobs, Cousins. Mike Evans coming back to Tampa Bay, Schultz going to Houston. We hit a bunch, and then we haven't been live since Tuesday, so there's a whole lot more. It got even crazier over this last week, so we are going to be able to go player by player real quick, probably 2 to 3 minutes a player, give you that knee-jerk reaction, and then, of course, diving into another draft where we look at how they have impacted the ADPs in their new homes and what's going on. That's a lengthy intro just to tell you we're ready to dive in, but my man Mo, how are you today?
Not too bad. I'm not in my usual setup today. I'm actually out of town, but making it work. Fantasy football never sleeps. So I'm excited to dive into the new player news and then get another draft then.
Hell yeah. Let's go. A couple comments coming in. Go Texans. We definitely have some Texans news to talk about. DGA, great to see you. Thanks for tuning in. If you're here with us live, the thumbs up button, your questions, your comments all help us to continue to grow and get out to more people. So please consider liking, sharing, retweeting, all that good stuff if you enjoy what you're hearing. We'll start at the top, and there's not a ton of great quarterback news, so I kind of wanted to get it out of the way early because we have so many juicy running back notes to hit. Justin Fields landing with the Steelers. We already talked last week, though. Russell Wilson also going there, and Russell Wilson reportedly going to be the starter as of now. I don't know how you determine these things in March without even hitting the field, but still, this is definitely not ideal if you have been drafting Justin Fields so far in drafts. What's your just gut reaction to Fields landing there? What is this, sixth rounder?
We texted back and forth a little bit right when this news dropped, and my initial reaction was, first, how can they already call Russ the starter yet in March? It's kind of ridiculous to me, and this whole situation to me is going to be, I think it's going to be a total nightmare, but I don't see how Fields doesn't get reps. I mean, so the Steelers beat writers, they're saying that the Steelers are unlikely to pick up his fifth year option. So they're going to need to see him on the field for at least some period of time to decide if they want to sign him to another deal to make them their franchise guy. I don't think anyone's going to argue with me when I say this. I don't think Russ is the answer to a franchise at this point in his career. Like, he's one of those Colts of the last few years, like a veteran fill-in, like stopgap guy. He's the in-between guy, but I don't think he's the answer to the Steelers' problems at quarterback. Justin Fields is the more likely out of the two, just given his age and current situation. So I don't see how they have to get Fields on the field for at least some period of time. So I think we'll see Russ to start the season, but a fair amount of Fields.
Yeah, I think so too. It does obviously impact how you can draft him, certainly in these best balls where we can't control it. Redraft, I don't even know if you're drafting Justin Fields or if he's going to be more of a waiver wire pickup. He was going, deservedly so, top 10 quarterback because of that Konami upside. You'd think he could have landed a starting gig, but no, I just don't understand why my Patriots, that's my only other takeaway here, why the Patriots, you're so desperate at quarterback here. All you have is Jacoby Brissett, and it would have taken you a sixth rounder. That's it. You couldn't have taken a stab here, see what you get, take Marvin Harrison at number, that first overall pick. I don't know what they were doing. I feel like they fell asleep at the wheel. Not that Fields, I don't know that I even believe in Fields, but for a six round price to maybe see what you have, I believe in the athleticism. I liked what I saw at Ohio State with the kid. I definitely think he is worth far more than what they picked, what he went for here. And the Steelers got themselves an absolute A-plus slam dunk of a deal, even if he doesn't play much for them in this one. So we shall see how that plays out. Moving forward, one note that I am just so excited about, and really all fantasy fans should be, is Derrick Henry going to the Ravens, a match made in fantasy heaven, as I like to call it. I wrote about this one this week. You can find that at RoastStreetJournal.com, but yeah, age 30, I get it. The cliff for running backs. We're betting on an outlier here if he's actually going to hit big, because age 30 running backs never do, right? Well, who's a bigger outlier than the human steamroller named Derrick Henry, who last year proved he still has it, running behind the worst line of Pro Football Focus's grades last year, ultimately still ripped off the second most yards, 1,167 yards after contact was second as well, 857. And also the second most explosive runs, 15 plus yards, 16 total there. And he hit the fourth highest max speed among running backs ahead of Keaton Mitchell, Jahmyr Gibbs, Kenneth Walker. He had five total plays of 20 miles per hour. That was only behind Breece Hall and Devon Achane there. The King still has it. And now he's going into the most fertile rushing environment you could possibly ask for. First, third, seventh, and first in total rush attempts. That's four of the last six seasons. Number one in rush attempts have the Ravens been in only below top three once. And they've been top three in rushing yards for all six of the years in that span. And no, Derrick Henry's been the number one rusher or number two rusher in all six of those years in yards per game. He is just an animal. This is a perfect rushing environment. 19 rush attempts inside the five for Gus Edwards. He turned those into 13 touchdowns, third among running backs. This, to me, I just could keep going on and on about how perfect this situation is for Derrick Henry to go off. He is up into my top 10 running backs, though. I know he's 30, though, Mike. Am I going crazy, or do you consider this a just dream spot as well?
Everyone always likes to talk about that age 30 threshold when it comes to running back, about how they fall off the cliff. But I think it's just time we start people have been talking about this the last two offseasons. I think it's time that we start not considering Derrick Henry as one of those typical running backs. Everyone knows just physically he's a mold breaker. And I just, like, in terms of his longevity, I don't know why he can't be the same thing. Obviously, it's scary just given the age, but we've seen it. He's consistently played behind, not consistently, but over the last few years, he's played behind one of the worst offensive lines in footballs and continues to produce. And now you talked about how he's getting that upgrade. I know you talked about Gus Edwards, but the Ravens running back room as a whole, 28 attempts from inside the five last year, converted into 15 touchdowns. And I think the expectations for Henry can be are pretty solid. I think he'll see similar usage to what he did in Tennessee last year. He'll handle the vast majority of the rushing work with limited receiving work. I believe he had 28 receptions last year, and he is rarely cracked that 30 reception threshold throughout his career, and I don't think he will this year. But
yeah, that was the second highest of his career last year at like 27. Not great. And Lamar doesn't like to throw those running backs. We know what we're getting. We're not getting receiving boosts here. But it's just a monster on the ground.
1,200 to 1,300 yards on the ground with 12-ish touchdowns. I think that's very much within the range of outcomes. And if you're drafting him as your second running back, I know you said you have him inside your top 10, but I feel like once we get down to it, I think he'll be drafted as a high-end RB2. I think he can provide solid output as your second running back drafted.
Yeah, and you'll see when we draft too, and I don't know if you've done any since we last drafted. Before landing with the Ravens, he was going around 50 to 60 range. I scooped him up in a 20% of my drafts ahead of time. He's now going top 30, and I don't think it's necessarily wrong by any means, but it's just one of the biggest risers for sure since the last time we drafted here, landing in that pristine spot. And I know he said 12-ish touchdowns. I think so, but if Gus Edwards can put up 13, I mean, if Henry put up 20 touchdowns next year, I don't think anyone would be shocked either. Like, there is that ceiling, which is, I know Lamar runs at the goal line some too, and I get it, but like, there is 20 touchdown upside here. The guy is, it's perfect. I absolutely love this fit despite the 30-year-old risk. Joe Mixon of the Texans, I know you had a ton to say on this, and I just said a ton about Derrick Henry, so I'll take a breather, let you take the lead on this one and give my thoughts at the end. What do you think about landing with the Texans? A volume back, top 10 offense? Seems like a solid fit to me. What's the gut reaction for you?
I'm interested just because of the C.J. Stroud-led offense. We saw what they can do last year, and I think that there's nowhere to go but up. Well, nowhere to go but up, but I think they're going to continue to progress as a team with those young receivers and Nico Collins and Tank Dell with C.J. Stroud at the helm. Mixon should be provided with plenty of opportunities, sustained drives from C.J. Stroud, and plenty of opportunities at the goal line to punch it in. So the environment's great, but the real question is Joe Mixon still effective? He had a strong overall stat line last season, just over 1,400 total yards, 52 catches, 12 touchdowns, and he was the RB11 in fantasy points per game last year. But he did this on the back of high volume. He basically ran the Bengals' backfield last year. He was fifth in raw rush attempts, first in team rush share percentage. He handled 67% of all carries for the Bengals, not just the running back carries. He handled two-thirds of all the carries. That was the highest in the league, higher than Christian McCaffrey, higher than anyone else. 13th in raw targets, 15th in target share, and third in goal line carry share. He handled 84% of Cincinnati's carries inside the five-yard line, and that's not what I think he's going to be seeing next season. I don't think – the Texans did sign him to a three-year, $27 million deal last year, but – the usage that Joe Mixon saw with Cincinnati last year, I think was reflective on with them not trusting Chase Brown. I think they wanted to get someone in the mix, but they just didn't trust Chase Brown enough, especially in pass protection. And we'll touch a little bit that on later when we talk about Zach Moss and Chase Brown. But I just don't think he's going to see that volume, but I think he could get there just because he's playing on such a great offense. And you kind of can tell that he's not the same guy anymore just based on his efficiency metrics from last season. His 2.43 yards after contact per attempt, 37th among all running backs with at least 100 carries. And he wasn't particularly explosive last year. Not many big plays, 36th in explosive run rate among all running backs with at least 100 carries last year. So if he's going to get there as a productive fantasy guy, it'll be on the back of high volume. And with the passing forward offense of the Texans, I'm just not sure if that all that volume is going to be there.
I think it's a fair point. Yes, it's definitely going to be a pass happier offense. I just also look at that though, and I see Mixon played 78% of the 2-minute offense with Cincinnati, had 11% target share. Not insane, but certainly not nothing either. And Damian Pierce is the only other guy on this roster. So yeah, maybe the raw total of snaps and volume won't necessarily be quite as high as Cincy, but I do think in terms of about 60% of the workload here, 65-70%, I don't think Pierce is eaten in, certainly not into the receiving work and probably not into the carry share. He did nothing last year, and we saw them finally turn the keys over to Devin Singletary when Pierce got hurt. It was 76%, 80%, 87%, 81%. We saw 30 carry game out of Devin Singletary last year, in addition to 2 targets in that game, a 22 carry game, a 26 carry game. You know, once they decided to finally ride him and multiple 21, 23, 19.8, you know, multiple top 10 performances when they decided to finally just turn the keys over. And this was, again, Devin Singletary. And yeah, you said Mixon wasn't that efficient. I totally get that too. But if Devin Singletary can have multiple top 10 performances within this offense once he was finally ridden, I do think, you know, 270 touches in a top 10 scoring offense, 23.4 points per game last year, probably taking another step forward. Even if he's not that efficient, and Dwayne McFarland did a great study about this offseason, that like efficiency metrics are awesome to paint the overall talent picture, but ultimately volume and snap share and receptions and targets, that's the king at running back. And I just see 270-ish touches coming Joe Mixon's way, even at an older, more inefficient level. So be it. I think he's going to still be a very, very solid running back too. He hasn't been outside the top 12 running backs in 6 years now. I don't know that he's going to fall out this year. I think this is a perfect landing spot for him for sure.
I think it just comes down to whether or not it's a volume-driven position. I think it comes down to whether or not you think he's going to hit that 270, 300 touch threshold. And if he does, he'll get there. I 100% agree. I'm just with him getting up there in age and just like dropping off in the efficiency, I'm just not sure if he's going to be if he's going to be that bell cow just because he just won't be as effective. But we'll see. Yeah, they did ride Devin Singletary when it was working last year. So there's definitely plenty of outcomes where he finishes with 270 touches. We'll just have to see. So
yeah, it'll be as you mentioned, he does leave behind a massive opportunity over in Cincinnati. Oh, 257 carries, 66 targets, you know, top 10 in opportunities. And you mentioned so many of the metrics in terms of the most carries per backfield, all that good stuff, especially in the red zone too. Third for inside the 20 carries, first for inside the 10 carries, and third for inside the 5. Tons of volume in the red zone now vacated. And who's going to gobble it up? Well, maybe Zach Moss, who has been signed on a 2-year, $8 million deal. I wrote about this one on the website as well, so I'll just quickly touch upon some of my key points there. In Taylor's absence from weeks 2 to 5, Moss was the every down back. He shouldered 80% or more of the snaps for all 4 of those weeks. He tallied 89 carries, 517 yards from scrimmage, and 4 total touchdowns, making him the running back 4 at an average of 20.4 fantasy points per game in that 4-week span. Small sample size, yes, but it definitely was far more than I had ever expected or seen from Zach Moss in his career. And so that definitely has me intrigued in that Joe Mixon-ish role. I do think Chase Brown is going to mix into those passing down situations. He does have to improve in pass protection. You mentioned that, but I think that was part of why he started to get onto the field by the end of the season, as his coaches noted that he had improved there. Now, Brown is a game breaker, 9.81 RAS score, relative athletic score, 35th out of 1,745 running backs since 1980. And he also flashed that on the field with a 22.5 miles per hour catch on a 54-yard receiving touchdown. That's the second fastest ball speed of the year. So this is an explosive athlete here that between the two, if you knew Chase Brown and Moss were splitting at 50-50, Chase Brown then would become the immediate must pick. But I do think Moss, especially that red zone volume we talked about, will be inheriting a ton of that 10 to 12 touchdown upside for Moss, in addition to 800 to 1,000 on the ground. I also do think, though, Chase Brown could also probably rack himself up 70 to 100 touches, with 50 or so of them being receptions, given how much they have leaned upon Mixon in the running back receiving room. I do think if Brown inherits that, he could have himself a monster year too. I do rank Moss higher just because I do think that's the sturdier, more consistent role. But as we're going to get into best ball in a little bit, some of those explosive games could come from Chase Brown. And Moss had missed time every year in Buffalo before going over to Indy as well. So we're looking at like the ultimate handcuff with benefits there in Chase Brown as well. Because if he becomes the starter, he is 210. Like, he's not this tiny pipsqueak that I think a lot of people think he is. Brown's got some girth to his smaller frame. I like Chase Brown too. So I think this is a win-win for both Moss and Chase Brown. Both, especially Moss, rose up my rankings to a huge, huge degree, but I don't mind taking both of them in drafts. I think they're both great values because I don't think Moss's price reflects just how valuable this role is going to be, given he was going at pick 150 not too long ago. Now he's in like the 90s. I think he should be going in the 70s, maybe even 60s. This is a very valuable spot. So I think both of these guys are great values right now. Moss preferred, Chase Brown not too far behind, though. Do you think any holes to poke in any of that?
Not really. I really just think that Chase Brown's role really will come down to how much he's improved in pass protection last year, because I think that they wanted to get Chase Brown on the field last year. They just couldn't justify it given how much of a problem that he was in pass protection. So I agree with you. We're on the same page that Moss will be the primary rusher. He'll handle all the groundwork, and I think that will lead to him initially at least getting the red zone opportunities. But I think they'll give Chase Brown his opportunities, and if he can prove that he's capable of pass protecting and then doing something with the ball when it gets passed to him or handed off to him, I think he'll carve out a solid role. So I think they're both worth snatching up in drafts, especially before I agree. I think their prices will come up. So snatching them up now before their prices come up too much, I think, is a good idea.
Absolutely. Well, backfield notes continue to pour in here, and Aaron Jones, landing with division rival, woke up and chose revenge, as Ian Hardett said in his tweet. And I love it. He already mentioned, I don't even know what's going on in Green Bay anymore. Now I'm focused on Minnesota. You know he's going to be fired up for those games. That's the type of player Aaron Jones is. I cannot wait for him to get that crack at it. But he is also now leaving a Packers offense that was completely on the rise. You know, you wrote about it, multiple 30-plus point days in their last half of the year, averaging right around 28 points per game. We're a top-five scoring offense. For once Jordan Love really started to take off, he was actually the quarterback, too, in fantasy. So this was a great environment. I was very excited to see what Jones could do, especially after he topped out at 130 yards from scrimmage in four straight games to close out the year. I was very excited to see how this can continue. Now he goes over to Minnesota, and if Kirk Cousins was there, great. Like, this could have been a great environment for Aaron Jones to thrive. It seems like they're going to make some moves at quarterback still, but as we look at it today, Sam Darnold's at the top, and that worries me. What's your take on Aaron Jones landing in Minnesota? I've got a few other numbers I'd like to toss out there, but I want to hear your gut reaction too.
I am also incredibly worried about Aaron Jones heading to Minnesota. So you talked about a little bit how he closed out last season. His season last year was interesting. It was pretty heavily impacted by injury. He was dealing with MCL injury and a hamstring injury, and he only played 11 games, but he closed out strong, like you mentioned, with 130 plus scrimmage yards in four straight games. But he was also doing that on 20 to 25 touches in all of those games. I don't think he's going to be seeing that in Minnesota, but I also don't think anyone's expecting him to have 130 scrimmage yards in every game with Minnesota.
No.
But Jones still proved to be effective when he was on the field, especially as a pass catcher. He was top 12 in both yards per route run and target per route run among running backs. So I think he's going to be, I think the Vikings understand what he can bring to them through the air, but I just don't like this fit in Minnesota whatsoever. They had little success running the ball last year. They were in the bottom of half of the league in all of these statistical categories: rush attempts, rush rate over expectation, rushing yards per game, yards before contact. And it just, you saw it last year. Nobody could really get it going except for a couple games here and there between Alexander Mattison and Ty Chandler. And like you mentioned, the potential of Sam Darnold or maybe J.J. McCarthy, whoever is going to be that quarterback, just makes the outlook that much more cloudy. So it's concerning in that sense, but there is some positives to this. I mean, he signed a $7 million contract, so he's clearly going to be the top option in Minnesota. He'll be the second top running back option in Minnesota. He'll be the secondary offensive option, along with Addison behind Justin Jefferson. And I think you can expect 15 to 20 touches a game, which should be enough for him to produce. And I think he'll produce like a low-end RB2, and that'll be solid production. But the offensive environment and their struggles to run the ball as a team are problematic for me. And I want to be excited about Aaron Jones because I still think he has some in the tank, and I still think the price is good. But the inability of the Vikings to run the ball over the last few years and the question marks surrounding the offensive environment in general are having me a little hesitant right now.
Yeah, you mentioned 15 to 20 touches a week. Well, in his career, when Jones sees 14 or more carries, just carries, in a game, that's happened 33 times in his career, he's averaged 21.8 fantasy points per game, was on pace for 1,731 rush yards, 439 receiving yards as well, and 16 total touchdowns in that pace. But as mentioned, that was with the Packers, a much more different situation there. Sam Darnold's points per game, his offense is a very 23rd his rookie year, then 31st, 32nd, and 29th, all topping out at 17.3, 15.2, and 17.9 points per game as a total offense. So if it is Darnold at quarterback, I will be much more concerned, but maybe they are getting the ammunition to move up to get a Drake May, to get a Jaden McDaniels. Then I might feel a lot better about this, but I do have questions about Jones now also approaching 30 and all those running game statistics you cited for the Minnesota Vikings. It just seems like it should be a better fit than it actually is. I am worried. I'm not drafting him much at his price right now. One other running back, and the last running back we are talking about today that ultimately I am not drafting, wasn't drafting, and now certainly not drafting in his new home, is Austin Eckler going to the Commanders. And I hate saying that because Eckler has been one of my fantasy guys for the last 5 years. I've loved the guy. And maybe this is, he's already said it himself in his press game, his presser, was that he wanted to come here because Brian Robinson can be that big carry guy, wear down the defense just like Melvin Gordon used to do, and then it allows Eckler to go out and do his thing. He had some really, really productive years in that type of role, and who was the offensive coordinator at that time was Anthony Lynn, now his running back coach over there with the Commanders. So it is probably going to be this type of thunder lightning committee. We're talking about an Eckler career high of 206 carries. It's not like he was going to ever be at bell cow type of guy going to the Cowboys or anything like that anyways. Yet it's still the Commanders. And sure, maybe Daniels can spark this and the offense. I like Kingsbury. I do. I actually am one of the few people that think he can scheme a solid offense. And he's definitely used running backs really, really well. That's why I was so excited for Brian Robinson to be that lead back there. But now in a likely committee, Kingsbury, again, his running backs over the careers, you look at Kenyon Drake, you look at James Conner, have routinely been top five in total touchdowns for the year. But now it might just be a little bit more split up there between Robinson and Eckler. It certainly is a downgrade as well for Brian Robinson having another backfield mouth to feed. It seemed like he might have that receiving role potentially elevated, and certainly not now with a more souped up Antonio Gibson. So I just keep thinking of it, and they're going at like 90 to 100 range anyway. So I guess like in that range, maybe it's time to take a stab, but I haven't felt the need to. James Conner is still sitting there. Other guys that I like to draft instead over the split gross backfield. So my gut reaction is gross. I don't know. What do you think, Mike?
I think that the Austin Eckler move in and of itself isn't really moving the needle for a lot of people. I think basically everyone jumped on the Austin Eckler is taking a step back wagon. They kind of want, if you want to call him washed, you can. But I think everyone can agree that he's definitely taken a significant step back from what he used to be. But what I'm more interested in here is buying the dip on Brian Robinson. He's never really had a pass catching role with the Commanders. It's never been a part of his game. So everyone was drafting him highly in hopes that he might. Now we know Now we know that he won't have that pass catching role. I'm interested in buying the dip. I still think he's going to get fed as a ball carrier. Like you mentioned, I don't think Eckler wants to be carrying the ball that often. I think he wants to get out in space, be catching the ball. And with the ability to still be controlling the majority of the rushing work in Washington, I think he can still provide some value as a running back on your roster. I know with a rookie quarterback coming in, whoever that ends up being, it might not be the best situation in terms of the offensive environment to start the year, but he's going to be handling the vast majority of carries for this team. So he's going right around pick 100 right now. I'm still interested. I know it's not really a sexy pick, but he's never really had this receiving role, and he's still produced as a fantasy asset. So I don't see why not get him here and there around pick 100, especially if he's falling.
Yeah, he was the running back 21 last year, going right now like running back 30 or plus right now for Brian Robinson. So I still think, yeah, I do think there's some value to buying that dip. And who knows if Eckler is completely washed. It's one of those things we all have seen that carry where he's facing the Packers. He hit like 13 miles per hour, looked like he was running in mud. Eckler did hit 18 miles per hour in week one, had, you know, a 25 fantasy point day. So there could still be some juice, and maybe he was just playing through injury as well. I don't know. I guess the dip on Brian Robinson, if it goes low enough, but he's still going around guys I just like more that intrigue me more from the backfields or receiver positions. So we will see when we draft, and we'll see where Brian Robinson ends up falling. Because I'm not opposed to him. I like the player. I love the toughness. I think Dan Quinn's going to gravitate to that type of presence too. We shall see. We are now moving to the wide receiver position. Some great questions and great comments coming in, guys. Thank you so much. We'll definitely hit those while drafting. It's a little bit less structured, and we can have some time to move through those. So if you can be patient and hang on for about 10 more minutes, we'll be drafting, and we'll hit all the questions you guys have. Thank you again so much for being here. Again, any likes, shares, retweets, any of that good stuff really does help the channel continue to grow. Any new subs, we really, really appreciate you listening to our breakdowns. Let's talk about some wide receiver moves, starting with a massive deal. Calvin Ridley landing with the Titans, getting $50 million guaranteed, 92 over four seasons. Really, really solid deal for Ridley. Just probably not the spot we all want to see him land here, though, but there might be some stuff to be intrigued by. What's your gut reaction to Ridley landing with the Titans?
I'm more confused than anything. I mean, first, this was not the spot that he was pegged to be going. So that first and foremost, confused seeing the Titans pop up as the team. But it's just that I know this was with a different team, but Hopkins and Ridley were used so similarly last year. I'm confused as to how they're going to try to intertwine these two talents. Both of them were outside guys last year, but I think this a change of scenery is going to be good for Ridley. I don't think the Jaguars were really using him properly last year. He was running a lot of you can go look at those ESPN Next Gen route trees. He was running a lot of routes to the boundaries. He was playing exclusively outside. He wasn't really being used creatively at all by the Jaguars, in my opinion. So he obviously will be having to compete with DeAndre Hopkins for targets. And I like Will Levis. You mentioned earlier highest percentage of turnover-worthy throws, but a highest percentage of hero-worthy throws as well. So they're going to get the ball downfield to these guys, but it's just really hard to tell given their – similar history of usage, who's going to be used in what capacity.
I think you brought up some really good points though with the usage, and that's actually what Ridley himself cited when they asked him, why'd you pick the Titans? He did mention money, gambling man. It's not shocking there, but he did also say, I want to be the guy. I want to be used as the guy. And they didn't use me there that way in Jacksonville. He's already been talking about Callahan telling him slot roles and moving him all over the formation to get this more creative type of layup targets, in addition to a lot of the deep, tough boundary catches that we saw him making routinely last year. So really, really intrigued to see in this new role. And Callahan himself talked a lot about, before even getting Ridley, while he was at the combine, we need to add speed, we need to add playmakers, we need to pick the pace up on this offense. I expect a much faster pace, higher throwing. Vrabel was always bottom four every single year of his career in pass attempts, passing yards, just abysmal for passing offenses. And Callahan, we've seen how those offenses operate from Cincy, where he is coming over from. So I do think this is going to be great for an overall offensive environment if Will Levis can deliver the rock. We've seen some crazy beautiful throws from him before, in addition to some Jameis Winston style questionable decisions. I think it's a great move for him, though. I've always been drafted. I talked about Levis. If you can go back and watch any of our drafts, I continue to talk about him as one of my favorite personal quarterback going in the top 20 guys, or outside the top 20 rather, in those last few rounds. His price has come up about a round since this happened, understandably so, but I still think he's an absolute steal. The kid has a cannon, and I think adding a weapon like Ridley doesn't preclude them from also adding and dipping into this very, very talented rookie class as well. So I could see a much different, more high-flying offense. So yeah, for Ridley himself, maybe not the best landing spot, but it does just suggest what type of offense we should be picturing over here with the Titans. And I don't think it's going to be necessarily a huge downslide there for Ridley. He just has always kind of gotten drafted higher than where I typically take him. One guy I'm definitely going to be in on, though, is Marquise Brown landing with the Chiefs, 99th percentile with his 4.31 40-yard dash. And we've seen this guy shoulder wide receiver one burdens four times. And I don't think he's going to have to do that with Kansas City landing with the Chiefs. Obviously, it's Mahomes is the selling point here. But I do think he can when they need to use him as that number one guy. You know, when you look at 2021, his sophomore year, he was the wide receiver 6 in weeks 1 to 9 before Lamar got hurt. And then it all kind of went downhill. We've also seen him have these spurts before he himself gets hurt. But without Hopkins with Arizona just 2 seasons ago, Brown was the wide receiver 7 in fantasy points per game, wide receiver 5 in targets per game. He was killing it. And so now he lands in a spot that doesn't necessarily need him to be that target hog, but there's going to be plenty of vacated volume. There's really no one else here besides Rice and Travis Kelce. So I could see 8 to 10 targets weekly for a team that has desperately needed speed. Yeah, they've had MVS, but he doesn't bring any actual threat beyond just running wind sprints down the field because he can't really catch it with reliability. Brown can run a much more diverse route tree than just the go as well. So he can fill that MVS type of situation while also doing a whole lot more at every other layer of the field too. Mahomes himself has already said he brings a ton of dynamic playmaking ability to add a guy like that who's ready to come and work and be hungry. They've already been talking every day about getting the throwing sessions ready. They're trying to keep this thing rolling. Andy Reid was texting about getting a ring, and Brown was like, hell yeah, let's go. It's good. Everything about this is there's so many close landing spots across so many other positions. This seems like they just perfect. Whoever was going to come and be that speedster for the Chiefs was going to be entering a very valuable role. So I love this. His price has gone from 120 to 90 in the span of a week, and I'm still on board with him in that 90-ish range. I think by the time the season's rolling around, I wouldn't be shocked to see him going in the 70s. I'm a huge fan of this, but we've also seen injuries and inconsistencies from him in his career. So am I going a little nuts and overboard on Marquise Brown, or do you like the signing a lot too?
I don't want to say you're going too crazy, but it's hard not to get excited about a wide receiver signing on to play with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, everyone's going to get excited about it. It's just kind of a given. But like we said, he's coming off his worst statistical season last year, and I know he's had some success in the league, but it's always like every time people talk about Marquise Brown, like producing in fantasy, it's only for stretches. It's never across a full season. He's never finished higher than the wide receiver 21 across a wide receiver 21 in fantasy points per game across a full season. And it's all just these little chunks of games where he produces. And a lot of that can be attributed to quarterback injuries or his own health. But I'm trying to tamper my expectations, but I agree. Mahomes was, I'm sure, not thrilled to be running that dink and dunk offense last year. They didn't have a true threat downfield. So this will open up the field for Mahomes, and I'm sure he's happy to have him. But I'm trying not to get too ahead of myself. But obviously that the deep A-dot guy for Mahomes and the elite speed is something to be very excited about. No one is Tyreek Hill, but they're obviously trying to recreate him somehow. And they're doing it this year with Marquise Brown. We'll see how it works out. But I think still, yeah, around pick 90, pick 100, I think he's still a great pick. But I agree. I think he's going to get pumped up. We saw it happen with Kadarius Toney last year. Just whoever people assume the wide receiver one is in Kansas City is going to get pumped up. And this year, I think they're going to assume that – I mean, he'll have more competition with Rice now that Rice is a solidified guy in the offense. But I try to tamper my expectations. I'm trying my best to not get too excited.
Yeah, I do. I don't want my excitement to suggest. I think Rice is definitely ahead of him. I think Kelsey's definitely ahead of him. We're talking about third on the target totem pole here, but we've seen Mahomes sustain 3 quality options before. So we shall see how that plays out. The only other nugget in there, too, is who is going to catch balls for the Arizona Cardinals next year. I think Trey McBride is the obvious first person to bring up. He had 81 catches last year. I just did the math. He only had 15 catches through the first 7 weeks. So 65 of those catches came in the second half of the season, 130 catch pace over there. So this guy should, I mean, even now there's less competition for McBride to face. I think he is maybe the number two guy now, maybe the number one. He has number one tight end upside, certainly within his range of outcomes, will be that focal point of this offense from the tight end position. So that's big news for Trey McBride. Yes, they'll probably make, you got to imagine they add, if Marvin Harrison falls for them at 4, there's a no-brainer. And even if not, they'll probably draft Neighbors or somebody. So there will be some receiving talent coming in this rookie class. But even still, you got to feel good about Trey McBride now being that top dog in this offense. An offense that I do not feel good about their passing prospects are the Chargers. Good Lord. Keenan Allen going for a 4th-round pick, which was, again, come back to my Patriots, apparently too rich for the Patriots. I don't get what the hell they're doing. All this cap space that we're going to blow. This is not a Patriots podcast, though. Keenan Allen going to the Bears, 4th-round pick. To me, my knee-jerk reaction, I didn't even dive into this too much because he's coming off the best season of his career. He had a great year in terms of open percentage. He looked good. I know he's a year older and still on the field. Keenan Allen was as good as he's ever been, as productive as he's ever been, and certainly saw the biggest workload that he's ever seen. So he's coming off an amazing season, and yet he goes to the Bears where his skill set and DJ Moore seem to be very similar, other than the fact that DJ Moore is just younger, faster, and better at this stage of his career. So I just don't know. We're putting a lot of faith on Caleb Williams. All the hype is that Caleb Williams is the next big thing, and maybe he is. But if he's not, or if he has some growing pains as a rookie, to be able to sustain DJ Moore and Keenan Allen to these levels that both should be going in the first three-ish rounds of fantasy, I don't buy that. So Keenan Allen, he is starting to drop, but he's still going at the beginning of round four, sometimes mid four at the latest. I don't know. I don't love that. But also Mike Williams leaving there too, getting cut by them. Apparently he's interested, getting interest from the Panthers. Yay. The Jets, I guess if Rodgers was healthy, that would be cool, but who knows what to believe there. And then maybe the Steelers as well, which also not great. So none of the teams that you really would love to see Mike Williams land on are necessarily calling up his number. The other takeaway, of course, too, is what does this mean for Justin Herbert? Josh Palmer atop the receiver depth chart. And, of course, at pick five, they're going to – I'd be stunned if they don't go Neighbors or Rome. They've got to be somehow dipping into this elite receiving class. But then there's rumblings that they're the team the Minnesota Vikings are trying to trade up with. And maybe they do just load up on running game and defense, and it's just a hideous attack. Great way to use one of the best young arms in the game in Justin Herbert. But this has to be a huge downgrade for Herbert. Definitely a downgrade for Keenan Allen, in my opinion, and a massive glaring opportunity hole for whoever's going to be that wide receiver one. And if it's Palmer, good Lord, who knows? But yeah, I don't know what to make of this. It's hideous.
It just sucks all around, in my opinion. And we talked about it earlier on one of our first shows about what was going to happen in this wide receiver room. I didn't think both of them were going to get cut, but apparently Keenan Allen refused to restructure his contract, and I don't want to get too far into that, but yeah, I mean, I can understand that he's coming off the best season of his career, but here we are with both of them off the team and Josh Palmer as the wide receiver one. I know I mentioned it, grab Palmer, and I think you should still be grabbing him. His ADP is currently 171, so you can still grab him pretty late in drafts. I don't see why you wouldn't be, but yeah, it just sucks in every way you can think about it for Justin Herbert, zero weapons, Keenan Allen going to the Bears, playing with a rookie quarterback, and yeah, competing with a guy who's they do very similar things on the field, and he's just younger. So I agree. I just don't see any way that the Bears offense sustains two highly drafted receivers. So I'll probably just end up fading Keenan. I'm not going to make that call now, but one of them will end up being faded for me. I just don't see how they end up sustaining two guys there. And then Mike Williams, I used to love Mike Williams, but I think I'm done with him at this point. I saw earlier from Schefter, he's scheduled to visit with the Jets and the Steelers. I don't know why the Steelers would really bring him in. It's kind of just a replica in terms of the skill set of George Pickens. And once again, it would just be an older guy, especially one coming off of a major injury, competing with a guy with a similar skill set. So we'll see where Williams ends up, but he's not going to really move the needle for me, especially if he lands in Pittsburgh competing with Pickens. Like, maybe some people will put some steam behind him if he ends up in New York with Aaron Rodgers. I'm not really sure. We'll just have to see where he lands. But yeah, it's not great all around. Nobody really got an improved situation. It's just, we'll have to wait and see, but the Chargers will be bringing someone in for sure. And I'm sure people will get excited about that with Justin Herbert. But yeah, as of now, it's just gross.
Yeah, whoever that wide receiver one is, that rookie, is going to be in a massive, even in a Greg Roman run-obsessed attack. That's going to be Justin Herbert, number one, 150 targets right off the bat. Like, that's going to be a great spot to be. So that's really the biggest takeaway. I do like Shane Waldron, the play caller coming over from the Seahawks, did some great things, the kind of McVay tree. So maybe Keenan Allen and DJ Moore, they do fit the dink and dunk and get the ball, let them do their thing. Like, this could be a good spot here for Caleb Williams as well, with some really impressive weapons. We'll see what he does, but again, it just, the knee-jerk reaction is not a good one. The only other receiver trade we have, and then one last guy I wanted to quickly hit, Deontay Johnson going to the Panthers, which also is going to have a big impact on George Pickens. I'll let you take the Deontay impact, because I know that's been your boy, and then maybe I'll hit a little bit of Pickens, but What's your thought? I didn't think there was too many spots that Deontay could go to that'd be a downgrade. And it's not a guaranteed downgrade. Maybe Bryce does take a step forward. But, man, what we saw last year was one of the worst things I've ever had to watch football-wise. And I'm a Pats fan. Like, that was bad. The Panthers were even worse. I don't know. Seems like one of the only places Deontay could go and maybe get a downgrade. But maybe there is cause for hope. Let me know if there's a case for hope in your mind, because I don't necessarily see it myself.
I can't really make the argument. I mean, you can argue that the Kenny Pickett Steelers and the Panthers offense last year were equally bad. I mean, they were both pretty horrendous. So it's not too steep of a downgrade on going from Kenny Pickett to Bryce Young. So I guess you can take some solace in that. But yeah, it's not great. I mean, I believe in Deontay Johnson as a talent. One of the best route runners in the NFL, consistently finding himself wide open. But last year, we saw some pretty big issues with his effort, which is not something I want to be saying about an NFL player who's playing a game professionally. But, I mean, you just saw it out there. He didn't like it. And, I mean, is the situation going to be much better? It's going to be probably another horrible team in Carolina. And if you're questioning a receiver's effort and, like, being able to maintain interest for the entirety of a football game, it's scary, especially with how the Panthers are setting up to look as an offense next year. So we'll see where his price settles out. And I may still be in just because I think he's still a really talented receiver who can get open and beat just about any corner in the league. But yeah, unless Bryce Young is making a significant step forward, I just think this is going to be another nightmare offense. I mean, we saw Adam Thielen have success for about 6 weeks last year just because he was commanding a ridiculous number of the targets. And given Deontay Johnson's route running ability, I think he has the chance to command a ridiculous target share, but that's the only way he's going to do it. So target him in PPR leagues, and if the price is good, we'll see where it settles. But yeah, that's the only way he's going to be able to get there is just by taking all of the looks.
And granted, he could, if he gets that Thielen role, he's certainly a more juiced up Adam Thielen. And Scott Barrett had a great tweet about how Deontay Johnson last 4 years has been better than Justin Jefferson in terms of ESPN's open score. It's what he does well. He gets open, and for all the faults of Bryce Young, his receivers got open at the lowest rate according to so many different metrics. So this will be the type of guy he absolutely needs to get open in the shorter area of field and make those layup throws. Like, it could be a valuable spot. I don't believe in Bryce Young nearly enough right now. They've beefed at the line, though. Maybe that will help him out. I do think the bigger implication is going to be with George Pickens as a result of this, who finished last year. Once he finally got away from Mason Rudolph, the last two games where Mason Rudolph started, 15 targets, 11 catches, 326 yards, and two touchdowns, 21.7 yards a target, and 29.6 yards per reception was how George Pickens closed out the season when he finally was not part of the Kenny Pickett experience. We already know Russ Wilson's going to be there and ideally a upgrade. And if he's not, then Justin Fields will ideally. We saw him sustain DJ Moore for quite a bit too. And then you look at George Pickens' numbers without Deontay over those four games last year where Deontay missed. 28.6% target share, 3.0 yards per route run, and 16.6 fantasy points per game, the wide receiver 16. And that was while he fought through a 60.8% catchable pass rate. That was 80th in the league. So I think all things are coming up George Pickens right now, between the quarterback upgrades, between the now clear number one role on this depth chart. He already is. See, I mean, he's going right now around pick 50 to 60. So his price tag has taken that huge swing upwards as well. And really already was pretty high too. So I still haven't got a ton of him. And yet I really like the player, and I like what I've seen him do with a better quarterback with Deontay off the field. So it all should line up. I just find myself going elsewhere in that kind of 50 to 60 range. We'll see when we draft today in just a second who's there when Pickens goes, and we can kind of debate it. But it is a huge upgrade for him regardless.
I think it's massive. Just because there's one less body there that he has to compete with. And like you said, he commanded targets at a very high rate when Deontay Johnson was off the field, which is really encouraging, because the question that I've always had with George Pickens is he's always been that vertical threat, get up and make contested catches. So those types of guys tend to not command targets, but he was able to do it. 0.27 targets per route run when Deontay Johnson was off the field for that stretch. So he's getting looks, and with a quarterback upgrade and Deontay Johnson out of the picture, I think it's great. Russell Wilson's tendencies play pretty well into Deontay or play pretty well into George Pickens' game. Over the years, we've all seen those moon balls from Russell Wilson and him launching the ball up, and Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, all those guys coming down with it, Doug Baldwin back in the day. But then again, we have to go back to who the hell is going to be playing quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers throughout the season. I think Russell Wilson's skill set and tendencies play a lot better to George Pickens, but we don't know how many games we're going to get out of Russell Wilson. So I think all around, just anything related to the Steelers offense is just going to be a nightmare this offseason.
It really could be. The only other move, and I'll hit this one quickly, and I just entered the draft, and there's only a couple spots left to fill, so we will be getting that fired up in just a second. But the last move that I wanted to talk about here was Curtis Samuel landing on the Bills, and not just because it's now playing with Josh Allen. Anybody next to Josh Allen is relevant. That is the case. Yes, that's true. And yet you also got to consider that Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator here for Buffalo, Curtis Samuel had his career year under Brady in 2020, saw a ridiculous 138 total opportunities that year between 41 rushes and 97 targets. He had 77 catches on those looks, ultimately put up over 1,000 total yards and 5 touchdowns, and was the wide receiver 25 while playing with Teddy Bridgewater. Now, I don't think Samuel in this offense with more weapons around him is necessarily going to see that 138 opportunities. But again, he reunites with a play caller that loves to maximize his unique skill set, use him as a running back. He actually had the highest rate of first downs that year as well, was a huge chain mover for Joe Brady and averaged 1.5 PPR fantasy points per opportunity, 9.2 opportunities per game, was wide receiver 3 in total touches that season. So I do think a volume spike could be in store here for Curtis Samuel with really, besides Stephon Diggs, a very lackluster wide receiver cabinet. So I think this is a huge move for him. Do you have any last thoughts on him before I pull in the draft, which has just filled?
Yeah, I think not really. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they use both him and Khalil Shakir, both the slot guys. But I think Curtis Samuel has the edge over Shakir. Shakir's been in the system for a little longer, but I like Curtis Samuel more as a talent. So I'm more interested in betting on talent. So I think he's a good late round pick right now. And I think he can be used as the regular slot guy in Buffalo as long as he beats out Shakir.
Awesome. But well, that wraps up all our free agency news. Wolfpack, thank you again so much.
We used to have it all, but now's our curtain call. So hold for the applause. Oh, 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 oh. And wave out to the crowd and take our final bow. Oh, it's our time to go, but at least we stole the show. At least we stole the show.
Straight ahead. Devlin, second effort, third effort, touchdown. That's pretty awesome.
That's old-fashioned football right there, folks.